An important demographic trend has taken place in the last 4 or 5 decades in rich countries, and this is a big decline in fertility. Fertility is the number of kids born to a woman, and most rich countries now are below replacement, which means that the new generation are smaller than the older, and so that their population has already or will soon start to decline.
In this program, why demographics are the Achilles heel of the global north and how forward-looking immigration policies are the answer.
This will have important economic consequences in terms of size of the labor force, in terms of age distribution, and in terms of the number of people who are retired relative to the number of people who are working. I am Giovanni Peri. I am professor of economics at the University of California, Davis, and I am the director of the Global Migration Center at the UC Davis.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. While the immigration debate tends to focus on culture, identity, and potential economic benefits, Giovanni Peri says demographics in the aging advanced economies of the North make a strong case for immigration policies that allow larger numbers of immigrants to help stabilize population growth. Peri is director of the Global Migration Center at the University of California, Davis, and author of Immigrant Swan Song, published in the March 2020 edition of Finance and Development magazine.
So how does this aging population translate into the economy?
So the age structure of a country is a very important determinant of its economic characteristics and of its economic growth. So there are three main effects of population decline and population aging on the economy. The first is that the labor force, which is the number of people who are of working age and are working or are looking for a job, starts shrinking, starts declining, because the cohort who are entering it, the young cohort, are smaller than the cohort they're exiting it. This implies that firms will have problem replacing workers, finding workers for jobs which are around, and so employment growth can slow down as a consequence of this. The second big and important fact is that within the labor force, the age structure is going to change. There are going to be more older workers and fewer younger workers. And this is important because younger workers are those who bring in new technologies. They are the more entrepreneurial. They bring in innovation. So with a smaller number of them, innovation, growth, even the number of firms which are created can decline, and this can have an effect in slowing down economic growth of a country. And the third effect is that there will be a larger number of people who are retired relative to the number of people who are working. And in this respect, we will have a pension system which is based on working people paying for people who are retired being in a much more difficult situation, and potentially we will need to reduce the pension benefits of an economy.
And in this article that you've written for Finance and Development magazine, you write about immigration and how immigration impacts these trends. So to what extent does immigration contribute to population growth at the moment?
So already immigration in the last 2-3 decades has been a very important factor for population growth in rich countries. In the U.S., about 35% of the growth of population in working age has come from immigration. In Europe, 80% of it has come from immigration, given that the natural growth of European labor force has been even smaller than the US. So already in the last 3 decades, immigration has been a very important and sometimes a major component of the growth of population in the rich countries, and in particular of population in working age, because most immigrants move to their destination country when they're young, when they are of working age.
And so do these countries with, you know, low fertility rates, do they generally have more accommodative immigration policies?
So interestingly, while there is this overall flow of migrants from a relatively poorer country, which are also younger and with faster population growth, to richer country, which are older and have slower population growth, there is not a clear connection at the country level between demographic decline and inflow of immigrants, meaning that it's not true that the country whose population is declining faster are those who are attracting or trying to have more immigrants. An example are several countries of Eastern Europe, which are among those where population is declining the fastest. And some of them, notably recently Hungary and Poland, have had government with extremely anti-immigration policies. And in general, in Europe, there is not an association between a slower population growth and more immigrant, which means that just left to itself, immigration will not solve the problem of decline in population across rich countries.
So you look at the age dependency ratios in your article as an important factor in all this. How does the age dependency ratio work? And what are, in fact, the current trends?
The age dependency ratio is the number of people who are 65 years and older divided by the number of people who are between 15 and 65. So intuitively is the number of people who are retired relative to the number of people who work. This is an important number because any type of pension system in a country depends on this. So this number in the US in the 50s, around the 50s, was close to 1/10. So there was one retired person for every 10 people who were working. However, now in 2020, this number is closer to 1/4. For each one person who is retired, there are four people working. And in a country like Japan, this number in 2020 is closer to 1/2. So for each retired person, there are only two people who are working. So clearly, this is a very important determinant of how we can pay for our pay-as-you-go system, which means a pension system in which the working people are paying for the retired people, just as is Social Security in the US. With fewer people working per retired, either they will have to pay more or the benefits in pension terms are going to be reduced for people who are retired. So these are big and dramatic changes in how countries pay for their pension system. And of course, eventually, even having immigrants will age as well, and so they will become retired as well. But in a period in which this demographic transition is so strong in some country, and these dependency ratio are becoming are changing so fast, immigration could certainly adjust and allow for a smoother transition rather than an abrupt either reduction in benefit or increase in taxes, as it will have to happen if immigration continues to decline.
Hmm. And you just mentioned there some fiscal consequences of this aging population. How much does your average immigrant contribute to an economy over, say, the course of a decade or so?
So let me premise that immigrants can be very important contributors to the economy where they go. Of course, this is depending on them integrating in the labor market, working. But in most destination countries, notably in the US, in Canada, in Australia, immigrants do work, are integrated in the society. And given that they arrive, as I said, when they are relatively young, they have a long contributive life ahead of them as a worker. An estimate say that for immigrants who arrived in the US in the last 10 years, who on average are relatively well educated and have a long contributive life ahead of them, over their lifetime, they could be contributing more than $170,000 per average immigrant, per immigrant, over the course of their lifetime. So this is a real big fiscal contribution, meaning that this will be the difference between what they pay in taxes and what they receive in benefits. So net positive fiscal contribution for the United States from recent immigrants, and as I said, working immigrants who come in as young in several countries could have potentially similar contributions.
And so what about the impact of migration in the countries from where these young migrants are coming from? I mean, does losing these people create problems for those countries?
So large flows of emigrants, people who leave countries, is always a potential concern, even because a lot of these people who move out are relatively highly educated, they are young, they could be highly productive. One interesting fact is that most emigration in the world, so most of migrants moving out, they move out of countries which are not the most extremely poor countries in the world. They move out of intermediate income countries. If a country are very poor, even knowing about the opportunity abroad and having a minimum budget to migrate is a problem. These subsistence economy don't have very large migration. But in country with intermediate income, such as Mexico, Latin America, some country in Asia, the Philippines, those are countries where migrants, where there is a large outflow. So on its face, there could be a risk of what is called brain drain, so of draining some productive forces from these countries. However, a lot of recent research has shown that there are also potential benefits from what is called more brain circulation rather than brain drain. Mm-hmm. Let me explain. So migrants that go in destination country have immediately one potential benefits for their origin, which are the remittances that they send back. So the money they earn and send back. And remittances over time have become a very important source of foreign money, foreign capital, and they have helped the families, they have helped children to get educated in those family. Sometimes they've also allowed this family to invest. Those are important flows. But then in the medium and long run, there could be other potential impact. Many migrants are not permanent migrants. They work in destination for a while and then they go back. And if that happens, they go back having accumulated skills and abilities, and they can bring them back to their country, start companies, and there is a lot of evidence that they do this. And interestingly, there is also an incentive effect, which is if people know that they can migrate to richer country and earn at least for a while, they're more incentivized to get education, to get some skill, to get some ability, which are useful to migrate. But then many of them who study and get an education don't end up migrating. So all these facts that there is return migration, there are remittances, there are positive incentives, make people say that some of the negative effect of subtracting this group of people can be actually attenuated in the country of origin, so they may not have such negative consequences from migration too, with the result that migration seems to be beneficial to the destination and not so hurtful to the origin, so overall have a positive impact on the economy.
Wow. So you're making a pretty convincing argument for increasing immigration flows. And if the benefits are so obvious, why isn't it happening to the extent that it should be happening?
In rich countries, and US and Europe are an example, there is a real sentiment of the population, which is in large part of it, in large segment of it, fears immigration. There is some anti-immigration sentiment. So what is interesting about this are a few things. First of all, this sentiment is mostly based not on economic consideration, is based on the idea that immigrants are different, they can bring different culture, different values, they can put at risk society and the work of the local culture as we know it. But also it's very interesting to notice that there are some groups which are more skeptical or more nervous about immigration than others, usually the older people, people who live in more rural area, people who have a lower education tend to have higher skepticism and have more anti-immigrant sentiments. So to consider consideration about this. One is that there is a lot of research, though, that shows that being exposed to immigrants themselves may reduce this anti-immigrant sentiment. So if you think of the United States, the big cities in California, New York, which are attracting a lot of immigrants, they actually have quite pro-immigrant attitudes and opinion. The more anti-immigrant attitude are in the part of the South and the Central United States, where actually immigrants, there are not yet very many of them. So people fear what they don't know. Exposure to some immigrant, especially highly educated immigrants, seems to have an impact. So in a sense, here, more open policies towards immigration could generate a more sympathetic and a more positive attitude towards immigrants. The other point is that I said at the beginning, older people seem to fear immigration more than younger people. And in this sense, that demographic dynamic is a little bit paradoxical, because the old generation, we just said, are people who are on a pension, and they are people who would benefit the most from immigrants who help pay their pension. Moreover, a lot of immigrants work in services, which are assistance to the elderly, home assistance, home services, which are particularly beneficial to them. So from an economic point of view, this group is benefiting, but they are the ones who are more worried about immigrants.
And so do you think that, you know, the younger generations of today who are perhaps more exposed to immigrants generally will be more amenable to immigration policy and, you know, in turn help stabilize population growth?
I am cautiously optimistic, just looking at how the recent decades have evolved. Certainly, the younger generation have been more exposed to immigrants. Moreover, I would say a lot of European large urban areas, which have been very economically successful, are an area where immigrants have grown significantly, and new generation have been in strong contact with them. And those are also the city which show a more open pro-immigrant attitude, therefore these dynamics that I'm saying, where exposure to immigrant and economic success, which is in part brought by them, are going to be two strong forces counteracting that original fear. I do see, though, these counter tendency, which is strongly in place in the US and in Europe, of some populist government, which to the contrary come to power by promising to limit immigration, as a real force that is going to affect for years immigration policy. I hope that over decades, this more progressive but slower type of forces of being exposed to immigrant economic growth happening in the places where immigrants are will slowly also change opinions and generate some more openness in rich countries. I have to say, overall, the history of the United States, for instance, has been an history of swinging from pro to anti to pro immigration attitude with important back and forth. So I'm not sure that the progress will be linear, but certainly there will hopefully be, in the longer run, this forces will become more important, and the opening to immigration will be considered as a way of reducing these issues created by population decline.
Thank you so much, Giovanni.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Giovanni Perry is professor of economics and director of the Global Migration Center at the University of California, Davis. His article, Immigrant Swan Song, is published in the March 2020 edition of Finance and Development magazine. You can read the article online at imf.org/FND or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. Look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.